Hey, it's Lauren. Thank you so much for listening to The Afterlife. Enjoy the episode. This episode has been sponsored by my business, Lauren Grace Inspirations. I'm a business and life mentor, a workshop facilitator, a soul-led entrepreneur, and host of The Afterlife podcast. I'm passionate about supporting people like you through transformative courses, mentorship, and trainings so that you can live the life that you choose. I love all things time management and helping the people that I work with to master their mindset. I truly believe that life is a precious gift, and when we can learn to be at one with our thoughts, when we can learn to love ourselves, control and master our time, we really can live an extraordinary life. I have a whole bunch of free offers on my website, and I strongly encourage you to go and check them out. I'd love to keep in touch with you. You can find me over at Lauren Grace Inspirations on all the socials, as well as laurengraceinspirations.com. And I strongly encourage you to sign up for my newsletter. 2 times a month, at least, I send a positive newsletter that's all about helping you to live the best life possible. I always include a card of the day, a business or a strategy tip, and I also include a spiritual lesson. I would love to have you join me, and I'd love to join you on your journey. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Hi, Lauren Grace here, and welcome to the Afterlight podcast. And I'm joined today by Wenu Solsona, an Argentinian-born citizen of the world. When it was learned to create blue ocean companies in various industries, disrupting the status quo and eliminating competition. With a focus on excellent customer service, admirable leadership skills, and a perfectionist approach to systems and processes, she is a rare all-rounder. Wenu exudes passion for what she does, and her can-do adventurous spirit have seen her venture into a number of unique and wildlife experiences. She graduated 3rd overall in her university, speaks 4 languages fluently, and is an ex-helicopter pilot and member of Entrepreneurs Organization. Her priorities today are making a positive impact in the world, elevating human consciousness, and taking care of the environment. Oracle is her most passion-driven project to date, and she is fully committed to its success. And Wenu is joining me again today. Last time we talked, I was like, oh, I just love hanging out with you. And I really wanted to extend the opportunity again today to talk about 2 of our favorite passions, and I'm putting you in the same category as me, which is spirituality and also business, because I feel that you don't always get the 2 when you're talking to certain people. So welcome, Wenu. Thank you for coming back on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So just for our listener at home, she's already been on the show, so we're not going to go into her whole spiritual journey and where it all kicked off. If you want to get into that and hear about fabulous her new business, Oracle, and channeling and all of that, really check out our recent episode, because today we are going to be talking a lot about business and spirituality. I want to talk about, you know, what are some of the things that you do in your business? How important is it to compare ourselves to others or not? Is it important to be better or cheaper or different? Is money spiritual? What are some of the things that you do in business that you wish you'd learned earlier? What are some of the key mistakes that spiritual entrepreneurs are making? And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, so there's going to be a ton of value for you here in it. So why don't we start off with the whole idea of, you know, where did you first find an interest in business? Because I'm under the impression that you got started from a very young age.
Mm-hmm. I did, actually. And, my great-grandfather was an amazing entrepreneur. He had the biggest convenience store, I guess, in my little town where I was born in the south of Argentina. And that eventually passed to my grandfather, who was one of 21 children by the same parents. Don't ask me how that happened, but it ended up with my grandfather. He was the 3rd from the bottom, and he was an amazing entrepreneur. And I don't know if it came from there, because my parents weren't exactly entrepreneurs. My mom a little bit more than my dad, but from a very young age, I just really liked doing my own thing and having my own little business. I used to sell arts and crafts in summer in our little town, and I mean, I remember even in high school selling, you know, making popcorn and selling it here outside the rugby stadium and whatever I could kind of do. I thought it was just really fun. And it wasn't even about the money. It was about the challenge of like just doing something and selling it. And I always liked it. So I never really kind of paid attention to it. Like looking back now, I was like that, but I decided to study hotel management. And I think I wanted to do that because I really wanted to run a hotel. And I like traveling. Hotels are nice.
Yes.
So I studied that. And then when I was living in Whistler, Canada, I was always very adventurous, and I had tried one of those. It's called an Orbitron, but it's a human gyroscope. Those I don't know if you've ever seen them. It's three rings, one inside the other, and you stand in the middle, and NASA has them.
Yeah.
You stand in the middle, get strapped in, and then you turn in all different directions. So I love that kind of stuff. And so I thought this would be cool to like have at parties. So yes, we bought one. Well, I bought one from Mexico, and we actually ended up setting it up in Whistler, Canada. It's still there if anybody goes to Whistler. It's called Spin Cycle Thrill Rides. That was my first business. And we used to charge, still do, I think, $9 a ride. It's a 2-minute ride, and it did really well. So that was my first business, early 20s. And really kind of like the bug just bit there. I also had a job, a normal job. This was not like on the side kind of thing. And eventually we bought, with my ex at the time, we bought like a bungee trampoline, which is, you know, those trampolines that, there's a structure around it. You have a trampoline, you've got like bungee cords, and you jump like very yes. high because you strapped it.
Yes.
So that also did well. So I quit my job, and I had Spin Cycle Thrill Rides with this bungee trampoline and human gyroscope for a couple of years. And then I left Whistler, sold that business, and came to Cape Town. And, you know, from then onwards, I guess I haven't looked back. I mean, I don't think I could ever, ever have a job. It's just more fun this way.
Yeah, I definitely think it's difficult when you're an entrepreneur and you're also a leader. And I can really relate to that, because sometimes it can be difficult to work for other people because, I don't know, like you see a lot of holes that people aren't doing, or people aren't picking up the slack, and, you know, it's all, yeah, it's an interesting experience, definitely working for others versus working for yourself. One of the things that I talked about in your bio is the concept of blue ocean strategies. And it sounds to me that some of the things that you were getting involved in from an early part of your life were actually blue ocean. You know, they were quite different. There wasn't a lot of competition necessarily. Can you talk a little bit about blue ocean strategies for our listener at home, especially who might not be familiar with blue and red oceans?
Yeah. Well, yes, I think it's so important. If I can recommend a book for any entrepreneur to read, is the book Blue Ocean Strategy, which is where the term comes from. And that, I love that book because it talks about, you know, blue oceans versus red oceans. And what most people do is they operate in a red ocean. A red ocean is just means competition. It means direct competition. So most people, you know, copy or have, you know, want to do a restaurant or want to do things that are already out there. And they kind of just copy what other people are doing. And they're either try and be better or they try and be cheaper. I mean, those are kind of like the two options. Sorry, touching my hair. But that's what most people do. Most people are a little bit like sheep in sort of every area of our lives, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that obviously everyone's trying to be better. So everyone's really trying hard to like make the best product and the best service, or everyone's trying to be the cheapest. And that's kind of also a problem because your margins are so small. And yes. So what this book talks about is try and do something. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but that puts you in a league of your own where you don't have competition, or at least not direct competition. So they suggest to take an idea that you might have, and they give you a method for doing this where you remove some things that are not ideal about a business, and you add something else and different that makes you just completely different to everyone else and therefore eliminates the competition. And, you know, I looking back, I realized all my business were blue ocean businesses. And I guess I did it naturally. I mean, I did read the book halfway through, but it just made sense to me to do it that way. So I had an outdoor cinema, for example, here in Cape Town. First of all, there's no outdoor cinemas aside from the Galileo. But I really tried to do it differently. And it came naturally to me, like, how can we make this better? And without copying anybody, just like, how can we make it better? And always looking at things from a customer perspective. Well, the customer comes in here, you know, for the Galileo, we have food vendors, and I really made sure that we have all the different foods available, not too much, not too little. What do people want? You really have to listen to your client. How can it be unique? You know, we have at the Galileo, there's like lawn games and there's entertainment, and we move around to different venues, and you know, we have these chairs and blankets and all of these things that, you know, some of them come from me, but a lot of it just comes from listening to people and also staff. So creating something that is not out there, even if it's a little bit different, is like super, super important. And that is what it means to do a blue ocean. And I highly encourage anyone starting a business to think about it this way, because it makes your life so much easier. Even when you're like marketing or doing some PR kind of thing, people love something that's different, right? Like sometimes the media is craving different things. It's going to be a lot easier to get out there and get onto newspapers and magazines and things like that if you're just out of the norm. So yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Because people are always looking for an angle. They're looking for a story. They're looking for, you know, yeah, like something that's unique. I want to talk to you quickly about something that you mentioned there, which is a lot about listening to your customer. So I guess I have a bunch of questions in relation to that. But one of them that I want to start with is, how important is it to listen to your customer and act versus just listening to your customer and seeing whether or not there's a pattern? Because I think that sometimes what happens is people are really reactive. So for example, let's pretend one person's very vocal and they say something, but it's not actually the kind of the consensus of most of the people that are, that you're servicing, for example. So how do you kind of discern whose voices to listen to versus who's to ignore?
Yeah, good question. Well, you really have to discern yourself. And for me, it feels natural, because, you know, you can have somebody say something and usually, you know, like, oh my gosh, that is so true. Like, we really should, or that is a good idea. And other times you just know, like, you know, the customer is not always right. You know, often the customer is wrong. So you always have to listen to it. And then you absolutely have to use your own personal discernment. And that's where you come in and you go, well, there's a point, there's no point. Sometimes if you're not sure, just share it with your team. You know, I tell you, I share everything in my team. I'm like a very open book. Whenever a new idea comes in, I'm like, guys, there's this suggestion. What do you think? Get everybody's opinion. Be humble about it, because you might have, you know, a thought or an opinion. But you know, the best thing you can do as an entrepreneur is just be really humble. Like, to discern at the end of the day, it's your call, your final call. But don't think that just because you think you know what happens sometimes is we're so passionate about something, especially if it's a skill, right? If it's something that we love to do, we're passionate about it, and maybe we're passionate about it a little bit distortedly compared to other people. And we think it's just so great. And maybe most people think it's okay. So yeah, just try and put your feelings aside and think about it very logically. Ask people, listen. And look, at the end of the day, you're going to make the final decision, which is great. Sometimes it can be a little bit lonely. But yeah, just that humbleness is super important. And I for sure don't listen to everything my customers say. I mean, you can tell sometimes people have their own stories and their own agendas, and they just come and might complain about something that you think it's totally illogical. So I still always like say to the customer, oh, okay, yes, sure. You know, like, I'm very nice. Yeah. But then I'm like, you know, forget that comment. So yeah, that's how I do it.
So do you have a business plan normally when you're starting your businesses? Are you clear on why you're getting into business, who you want to serve, your values? And that might also help you when you're discerning and trying to make those big decisions. But essentially, do you kind of start off with an idea? Because I think that a lot of entrepreneurs don't do that. They're very creative. They're inventors. They're like really wanting to get in and try a new thing. Not a lot of people take the time to actually nut out a business plan or who they serve or why they're in it.
Yes and no. I mean, not a business plan like in university for sure. Yeah. For me, look, I mean, personally, I tend to have a pretty good feel for if something's going to work or not. So I've been lucky that way. What I do is the numbers. I definitely do the numbers. So whatever idea, in fact, that's usually like my first thing. Even if I have an idea today, you know, I see something and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really great idea. Very soon, you know, today, tomorrow, the next day, I'm going to sit down in an Excel sheet and just like write it down. And it's super easy. You know, you just go 1 to 10 or whatever, you know, the numbers yeah. are, how much you think you're going to charge times, a couple of like the costs and, you know, figure out if this would be good or not. Usually you would have a sense like, oh, this is going to be good or, oof, I don't know. So I do the numbers for sure. And then I, again, look at, is this around? Are other people doing it? You know, is it working for them or not? I do that, but I don't do it in like a real business plan kind of thing. What mm-hmm. I do is a marketing strategy, because marketing is for me like the most important thing in a business. So the marketing is very important. So that I do it not at the beginning, but at some point in the business, we go, okay, who is our client? Very specifically, who are we talking to? And you know, what are all the different avenues that we can reach those people? Where are they hanging out? You know, that client yes. that we're targeting, who are they? What are they doing? And we look at that in quite a lot of detail, especially if it's a digital or if you're marketing digitally, is super important. Well, actually it's important all the time, but yeah, the whole business plan, it's more like a feeling for me, you know, and again, it's like asking people, especially if you don't have experience in doing your own business, make sure you speak to not just your family, because your family is usually going to be supportive, but maybe friends, and you say to them, please be brutally honest, especially if you like think that it's a bad idea or you have something negative to say. I say to people, please give me bad feedback. I love bad feedback, because that's really yeah. what's going to help me improve. If you tell me everything's amazing, that's very nice for me to hear, but I'm not going to change anything. Whereas if you say, oh, I don't like this, I still discern, but that helps me. I'm like, oh, okay. And like now 3 people don't like this. Very important to listen to yeah. that. Yeah.
I love Alex Hormozi. Have you heard of him before, his work? I'll have to send
no.
you. So he's got a couple of different books out, but one, his most recent is $100 million leads, and then he's got $100 million offers, and he really takes you through it, and he's all about making business knowledge accessible to people. He does free courses and everything because he wants people to scale, and then he wants to buy their business or help them take it above 3 million. So it's very cool. Right. But one of the things yeah. that he has you do in the $100 million offers is actually go through and write a whole list of objections and all the reasons why people wouldn't buy. And then trying to find all of those key things that you can either through your marketing, let them know that you've covered off, or create through lead magnets or additional bonuses and things like that to really enhance your offer. So I love that what you're talking about is really, it's not about like getting all the cheers and everything like that. You really want that realistic kind of look. One of the things that you said that was really important though, that I want to go through, is a lot about the customer avatar, or being clear on who it is you serve. And I think that one of the challenges that we have is that sometimes we think, as service providers especially, is that we want to serve everybody. But at the same time, the riches really are in the niches, right? So I'm curious to know, for you, when you are choosing or getting clear on who it is you serve, your customer avatar, how niche do you go?
As niche as I can, you know, ideally, if you want to, you want a very narrow niche, but a very deep niche, right?
Yes, so like a growing niche.
I say to you, yeah. So if I said to you, you know, I'm a photographer and I do, you know, weddings and I do family portraits, I do corporate, I do food, you know, and I do landscape and I'm excellent.
And everything. You're excellent at everything.
At everything, you know, and then if I go and I say to you, you know, I do wedding photographies. This is what I specialize in. I do, you know, brides. I do before the wedding, after the wedding. I do the dancing parts. And you have a wedding. So are you going to go for the wedding photographer or this guy that does everything, including weddings?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. You know, if there's, I don't know, a beauty store or, you know, wellness and we do, I don't know, facials and Botox and, you know, liposuction and, yes, you know, massages. And then this other guy does, you know, liposuction for women that have just had a baby and you are a woman that has just had a baby, who are you going to go for? And so
yeah,
the great thing about that is you can also charge more. It's almost like you specialize in something. You can charge more for it. I like to go as niche as possible. For Oracle, we know exactly who our target is. You know, she's a 45-year-old woman. Her kids are early teens. She's, you know, had a business or maybe worked somewhere, but she's, you know, at a point in her career that that's not like her thing anymore. And she's now got time for herself. And all of a sudden she realizes that, oh, she doesn't really know what her purpose is. You know, she's always been working for, you know, it's her job and her children. She's always been searching for these things outside of herself to find sort of happiness, but she finds that she's not very happy anymore. And she's trying all these other things. And I can go on and on and on about this person that we target. Yeah. Now, what yeah, that does is when we write copy, marketing material, we can speak very directly to this person. And if you are that person, you're like, that's me. That's absolutely me. This is for me. And now sometimes people, entrepreneurs think that, okay, but they're going to miss all these other people who it's for. But the thing is, there is one target person that you, that is your ideal client. And that person's going to listen very intently. And it's the 80-20 rule, right? There are going to be other people, but you want to get the bulk of them. And if you're speaking to no, to everyone, you are speaking to nobody, right? So it's, yeah, I would encourage that. And there's something that very often entrepreneurs don't get right. And like you say, it's like, well, I help everybody. It's for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not the best way to go about it.
Yeah, exactly. And very often there's millions of people that you serve within that niche. It's not as though there's only like five. You know, there's so many of them. I mean, I know that when I was first getting into mentorship and all that kind of stuff, I was like, oh yeah, I serve like small to medium-sized business owners. And then the more that I realized, no, like I need to niche down further. And then I started allowing my spirituality to really combine with my business know-how. That's when I started to be able to niche down even further. And it's like, okay, well, this is who I actually really serve. It's like women who are spiritual, who run spiritual businesses, or at least are into the spiritual world as well, and being able to work with them through that. And I think like what you're talking about, as long as we're getting clear on the fact that the niche is deep. So in that $100 million offer book, he talks about the four things that you need when you're creating that niche or when you're choosing your niche is basically like, can I target these people? Do they have purchasing power? Are they in pain? And is it a growing market? And so when you're wanting to like really refine who it is you serve, as long as you can tick all of those boxes, that you're going to be fine. And I love that in that he used an example of somebody who, for example, was helping people who are unemployed to write resumes, you know, which you would think is maybe like a good idea, but people who are unemployed don't have money. So they don't have money to buy that service of having to do. So it's an interesting thing. Yeah. So let's get now into the subject of, because I could take us in so many different tangents and I really want to cover off certain things today. Like for example, is money spiritual? Who's the first person that you hire? Some of the tools that you work with and that kind of thing. But before that, I think let's talk a little bit about your kind of you stepping into Oracle. So I'd love to know a little bit about how you first got inspired to start that particular business. And then also, was this the first time that you were really incorporating spirituality and business together? And how did you find that that marriage happened? Like, is it working well, for example? Is it giving you a bit of a lead on, you know, I don't know how much competition you have being in a blue ocean with that, but, you know, yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it is my first business marrying spirituality and business. Before, I had an outdoor cinema here in Cape Town. Before that, I had an outdoor fitness program called Adventure Bootcamp, which is ended up being quite big here in South Africa. And before that, I had this interactive amusement rides. And I also had a clothing business, selling clothing for women when I had my fitness business. So this is the first time, and how it came to me was about 4 years ago. I was sitting in meditation because I'd been doing quite a bit of meditation, and to, very briefly in 2009, my brother passed away. That was really the catalyst for me to get really deep in my spirituality, and I really went all in. So since 2009 until today, we're in 2024, I have been doing lots of spiritual stuff, books, meditations, courses, a lot of yoga, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, you go through phases where you're like very into it and you like meditate every day. And then for months, maybe you don't. And in this particular time period, I was meditating quite a lot, and I was wanting to sell the Galileo. I was pregnant, and it was just, you know, I had it for many years, and I thought, okay, well, it's a lot of late nights. It's time for me to sell it, but I wasn't selling it yet. But I just was thinking about, oh, what am I going to do next? And when I was thinking, what am I going to do next? You know, obviously you think, okay, what's going to be profitable? But for me, it was like, okay, I've now made enough money that I'm okay. You know, I don't have to like go after the money so much. Like, I want to go after something that's really going to really light me up, going to help people, help the world. I love animals. So I was like, I want to do something with animals. How can I help? I was like thinking, how can I help all the animals in the world? That'd be so cool. I was like, this is going to be hard. But it really meditation. I had been thinking about it for a few weeks, and yeah, I just really put out the intention there, I guess. And I was sitting there, and I got this download. I mean, I had my eyes closed, and then I had this idea. I remember it like it was yesterday. The word oracle was, you know, coming towards me. Was the O spinning, like it's in our homepage now. You can see it look like that. And it was spinning towards me, and it said oracle. And it was, this is, you know, it's an online platform for channelers. And I'd been doing automatic writing at that time. And I've been listening to a lot of channelers, you know, Bashar and Esther Hicks. And so I thought, this is great, because in my channel, I had a channeling session with a channeler, and her website was just really not great. It was just very disjointed. It wasn't clear what she was offering, but she was amazing. And I was like, this woman should be famous. And I really wanted to help her at the time. And I never did, but I guess it just stayed with me. And I thought, well, I love it. I love channeling. I love what they do for people. It's a very empowering thing. I love the messages. I'd been listening to a lot of it. It had been helpful in my life. Yeah. But as with a lot of spiritual businesses, they are just not the best in terms of how they portray themselves. They're very often confusing. Very often they do so many things that as a client, you don't know what to pick. You know, is it like this kind of healing? You know, there's all these different healings. I don't know. What's this like, you know, aura healing and this kind of, so yes. Yeah. And that's just something for people to like, think about, like, is your website confusing? Most websites are confusing, and also like too much text. And anyway, so that's really how it came to me. And I thought, this is perfect. I'm going to help in the spiritual industry. I've got this background in business. Now I can marry these two sort of passions of mine. And then I thought, well, if I change people's perception, obviously I'm going to help animals as a byproduct. Yes. So yeah.
I love that a lot. Yeah, no, you did. You did. And I'll, you know, we can go further into it as well. One of the things that you talked about was getting that inspiration from meditation. And I'm curious to know your opinion, because I think that sometimes as spiritual people, it can be confusing sometimes, because we get messages from spirit all the time. And so sometimes it feels as though, oh, I got this download. It must mean I need to start a new revenue stream, or I must need to integrate this new offer that I can do. And there's a lot to be said about actually not only niching down in terms of our audience, but also niching down in terms of the offerings. So how do you kind of discern in terms of, you know, when you're getting guidance and you go, that's clear, here we go, versus when you're getting guidance and you go, that's a pretty cool idea, I'll write it down for another day. Because Oracle is really focused in on that one thing. You know, you have that one offer. It's not confusing what you're doing. I'm not sitting there going, what is this about? It's very clear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard to say because it really depends on what the idea is, what you're currently doing. You know, I tend to have so many ideas, you know, and I also think it's kind of like a muscle. You know, the more ideas you have, like the more I seem to have. People say to me all the time, oh my God, you have so many ideas. And sometimes I need to hold myself back. That's maybe one of my problems.
Me
is
too.
Like, oh my gosh, I've got another great idea and another great idea. So I write them all down for sure. Just write it all down. In fact, I write so many ideas that then I put them in categories. You know, this is like a marketing idea, this is like a product idea, this is a staff idea or a logistics idea. So yeah, if you're like me, like try and hold your horses, you know, because it's not about just like putting it all out there. And you really need to use a bit of logic, a little bit of like, you know, like the heart and the mind have to work together. You know, it's not just all heart and it's not all mind. You just have to, you have to use your discernment. Inspiration comes from the heart. You know, if you're a spiritual person, maybe you get a lot of inspiration. And that's great. So write down. And then there's a space for the head. You know, take the head and go, okay, this is a good idea. Well, I think it's a great idea. Is it a good idea? Should we do it now? Should we park it off? How does this fit in with everything? Is it just going to dilute what we're doing, or does it add on to what we're doing? And really talk to your team. I mean, maybe you're a one-man show, but most people tend to have, you know, some people that work with them. And so it goes back to like being humble and listening. Like I just share with my team very often. And then you need to have a bit of a strategy, you know, also like how long does it take to implement the idea? Does it cost money, or and how soon will it bring money? So we've got, for example, a lot of things that we're doing with Oracle. It's all related to channeling, but now we're going to add courses and events and, you know, master classes, and there's a membership, but we're going, okay, we've got all of these ideas. It just, you know, what's going to make more sense? What's coming first? What's coming second? And you just go, you know, one by one. And, you know, you might have to pivot somewhere. You know, you're not going to have also all the answers right off the get-go. It's impossible. As you go through the process, things happen. You learn things. I mean, the thing is, you want to learn quick or fail. You know, it's not my thing. You know, fail quick and fail small, you know, but quickly, you know. And if it doesn't work, cool. Like you pivot, don't feel bad, you know, and don't also like get too stuck on like, oh, this is the way that it's got to go. You know, sometimes we do try something and it's like, oh shoot, you know, it didn't work like we expected it. That's fine. You know, let's quickly change course or add, subtract from this idea.
Yeah. Pivot's key. And actually, as you said, pivot, I wrote down pivot. Because I think that, you know, at least for myself as well, my business, it's been really important that I've listened to that. And I think for me, when things aren't flowing, I have to go, whoa, there's something that needs to change here. And sometimes it's just stepping back, looking at it more objective, working it out with people, and then moving forward. But yes, sometimes we don't know if something's going to work until we really give it a go. And I feel that, you know, when we're really know that this is the right thing to do, then maybe you stick with it. But again, you have to really discern that whole idea, because you don't want to throw good money after bad. You know, I see a lot of Shark Tank. I don't know if you have Shark Tank over there, but it's one of my favorite shows in the world.
Yeah.
I love it. But you see a lot of people who have, you know, who haven't always listened to that, or aren't really paying attention to the need to pivot.
Yeah. Sorry. And there's something to be said for that too. You know, sometimes it is so strong in you that like, you're like, yes, this is going to work. And it probably is, if it's that strong. Yeah. You might have to not like change the whole idea, but just like slightly the angle or how you approach it. But it is also nice to have that like knowing and that certainty about something and, you know, keep pursuing it. I think it was Toyota, one of these Japanese car brands that, you know, the maybe it wasn't Toyota, sorry, but like the guy tried for so long and he just knew and knew and, you know, everybody kind of kept closing the door on him. Tony Robbins talks about it. Maybe people have heard the story. But the guy eventually, through his persuasion, and he just is knowing that he knew that he was gonna, you know, that he was in the right, and you know, he made it. And there are those stories, and those are beautiful stories. And so, if you have that, you know, don't, you know, maybe it's also about how you go about it. Sometimes, you know, we don't know how to go about it, and the idea is good, but maybe the implementation's not so great. And you learn, you know, you learn very quickly. When you start your own business, because it's just it can hurt, you know, like it's money, it's your time, and you're like, and that's good, you know. We're here to learn and grow, and then once you learn it, you know it. So,
exactly, and you know, people talk about overnight successes, 10 years in the making, you know, but that's exactly what happens. Is you know, you build and you build your skills, and what's really exciting about that is very often we're led to what we're meant to do, and all of the things that we've learned along the way really allow us to leverage off of that. How important is innovation, do you think, in business, in your own personal journey? Because, you know, with the integration of AI, I mean, I'm using ChatGPT. I have a whole course where I teach people how to use it just on a really basic level so they can maximize their productivity. But, you know, we have to continue to innovate. And one of the things that I get very kind of confused about sometimes is people who are in business, but they aren't upskilling, or they're not looking at how to refine what they're doing, or, you know, but then wanting a different result than what they're getting. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. How do you stay inspired? How do you innovate?
Yeah. Well, innovation is super important. I love that course that you've got, like how to use ChatGPT. I mean, I would do that course, I have to say, because ChatGPT is here, and it's here to stay. In fact, I met a friend a few days ago. She hadn't heard about it. I was like, but what? You haven't heard about ChatGPT. And I mean, I use it every single day. And, you know, there's different ways of using ChatGPT. It's how you prompt ChatGPT, right? It's you can say rewrite this, but then there's like amazing ways to use it. So I'd be excited to do your course. It's super important. Innovation, you've got to, you know, and talk about, you know, I've been in business for, I mean, I started in, you know, it's like 25 years. I still, to this day, gobble books. And you know, to be honest, I reread books because there's some books that I just absolutely love. The One Page Marketing book, it's actually, I'm reading it again, probably for the fifth time. I audio read because I go to the gym or hike or whatever. So I audio read. It's a great book. If you're starting out, the E-Myth, amazing for our new entrepreneurs. The Blue Ocean Strategy, I could probably reread that. So I recently read one that you said something that's probably similar. It's called 1 Million Followers. Great book. And so whatever I'm kind of like to my next thing, like now marketing, so I'm reading all these marketing books, you know, I did fundraising, I had to fundraise for my company and I hadn't done that before. So I read a whole bunch of books on how to fundraise. Slicing the Pie, an excellent book I've just read as well on like how do you share your equity. And it's just such a good book if you're like struggling it's a very, very good one. And then you can ask ChatGPT. My friend did this because I shared it with him. He's starting a tech company and he's struggling because there's all these people helping and he's kind of promised them a share, but he didn't know like how to do it. Now, he didn't even read the book, Slicing the Pie. But what he said to ChatGPT is like,
summarize.
You are the author, I can't remember his name, of Slicing the Pie. This is what I've got. He said, ask me as many questions as you need to ask me. And then please slice the pie according to what, you know, has been happening. So ChatGPT 4.0 asked him all of these questions. Okay, how many people, who are they? What have we been doing? How many hours? He input all of that. And literally in a matter of like a few minutes, there he was, something that he had been struggling with for actually I think weeks and months, because he had this anxiety or like, how am I going to divide this? Like, you know, obviously everybody's thinking that they should get this percentage. And there you go, you know, it did it. And you can share the book. It's very fair. Hey, I just followed the slicing the pie methodology. It is really fair. And everyone's happy. And he didn't read the book. You know, literally it took a few minutes. So there's just so much of at our disposal. Actually, for me, it's like the easiest time to be an entrepreneur. In fact, especially if you don't have money, especially with ChatGPT, ChatGPT does contracts for you. Pretty much anything.
It's absolutely incredible. And I think what you're talking a lot about is, you know, leveraging off of the tools that we have. I think sometimes people want to, I don't know, like, I remember I was talking to a business owner and she was like, oh, I just want to keep doing things my way and, you know, trying it out. I'm like, that's a sure way to take your sweet ass time to achieve anything. Okay, you know, go for it. But a lot of people have actually gone before you. So sometimes when you follow a strategy or, you know, people, you know, it's incredible to me that we can go on Audible and get a download of something that somebody's been working their whole life on. And we can listen to it in 11 hours or something and get all the gold, you know, it's absolutely amazing. I think too, that, go ahead.
Well, the guy that wrote 1 million followers, you know, he's very, you know, he's a social media guru for musicians and actors. So obviously he's helping all of these people. He's like, he's the best in the trade, but he set himself a goal of having 1 million followers with somebody who was like a nobody, 1 million followers in 1 month. And he did it, right? So he ended up choosing himself because he was a nobody. He's like, okay, he started a brand new page, Facebook page from scratch. And he gave himself 30 days to get 1 million followers and he did it. Now he's the best in the world at this, or one of the best in the world. And he really wants to help people do this because he knows how to do it. And here I am listening to a book from this guy. You know, it's unbelievable, you know, and he's so good at explaining it. It's at our fingertips, whatever we want. It's just so easy to, and we've got, you know, rating, you know, on Amazon, you can see all the reviews and the ratings. So you're pretty sure that what you're buying is useful.
It's good.
So we've got to leverage from all of these things for sure.
Yeah, 100%. But I think one of the things too, is that when you know that you don't know everything or you know that you can do things better, I think that's what's really important. And you've been talking a little bit already about humility and understanding that maybe it's not always your way, the highway. Like when you're working with your team, maybe a couple people come together with you and you all come up with some fabulous idea. But it's just kind of, I think the entrepreneurship journey is almost a humbling thing as well. You know, very often it's like very humbling, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, but it can be difficult because when we look around and we see so many people and, you know, a lot of the people want to talk about, I'm a 6-figure, I'm a 7-figure, I'm an 8-figure earner. This is all the things I sell, $1 million worth of courses in like 1 week. And, you know, all this kind of stuff. There's all this pressure on people to feel that they have to be at that level. But I think, you know, it's really important to remember that you kind of have to stay in your own lane at the same time and not really worry about all of the noise, but you still have to take responsibility for making sure that you're giving yourself the best chance.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that. I think that you're right. Often we hear from social media, like, oh my God, the 6-figure, 7-figure, I don't know what even they talk about. And it's the people with it shout the loudest sometimes I get heard, but I find that, and I've got a lot of entrepreneur friends, and the best entrepreneurs are like the quiet ones. You know, they're the humble ones. They're and you know, this ties into like money and spirituality. I'm finding more and more and more, and I keep meeting more and more entrepreneurs and business people. They're really cool. Like I don't know. I find myself, especially lately, meeting people with quite a lot of money, and I find that they're really nice people. And I think that in general, society has this perception, or part of society, a large part of society has this perception that, you know, rich people or people that have big companies, whatever, there's something evil about them, or they somehow had
stole
to step
their money
on other people to get there. Yeah, like they did something bad, or like, you know, and I just think what a pity that you think this way, because that thinking is going to stop you from getting there. For me, you know, I said to my dad early on, I said, Dad, I'm going to have $1 million, right? This is, oh, you know, when I was like probably 19. And my dad, who's not an entrepreneur, is, you know, always had a job. And he's like, he kind of used to laugh about it, like not in a bad way, but he like, he just, and I said to him, Dad, if I don't believe that I can do it, I mean, I've got a lot less chance of actually getting there than if I believe I'm going to do it. So I'm going to start with believing that I can, yeah, believing this is a good thing, that I'm going to do good things with this money. And then let's see if I get there or not. But I mean, at least I'm going to give myself a little bit of a head start by just believing good things around money, believing that I can do it, believing that it's for the best of myself and everybody else. And at least, you know, already if you've got that belief, you're like way ahead from people that want the same thing, but have this like, no, you know, I'm not going to do it. Or like, I mean, you know, have this belief that there's something wrong or evil about it. I think that money, and you kind of asked right at the beginning, but I think that money is absolutely neutral. It's the meaning that you give money. And personally, I can say, you know, sometimes people hear me say this, they go, oh, I love money and I love business. And when I say I love money, it's like I give it a good connotation. I'm thankful every time money comes in. I'm like, yes, thank you, because I can do so much good with it. I can employ more people and I can make them work in this really cool environment and they're happy and I can service more people. And if I make more money, honestly, I'm going to, you know, I want to do things for animals. Like if I make a lot of money, I know exactly where I'm going to invest it in. I know who I'm going to give it to. Yeah. And also, I'm also going to have a better life. I'm going to be happier. My children are going to be happy. I mean, it's just like there's nothing for me that's bad about having a lot of money, you know. And even sometimes when I see people using money on things that I would never use it for, like I'm not really like jewelry or cars or that kind of person. But even then I go, well, you know, this person is buying, I don't know, expensive jewelry. You know, that money is actually going to somebody else and that who's employing other people. And it just like ripples out. So fine, now do whatever you want with your money. Like that's the thing, you know, just use it for whatever makes you happy. And you being happy is not a bad thing. It's just going to make more people happy. So we need to have this, like, give money like a good, you know, image. It's going to help you attract money. Yeah, it's you know, people kind of shoot themselves in the foot by having this like thing like, oh, mom, money's the root of all evil. That's bollocks, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And money gives you freedom. I mean, that's the thing. And I always say, you know, one of the things that I know to be true is that I want money so I can do the things I want to do and not whether or not I can afford to do them. I want to do the things that really call to my soul. And that's what money gets you to do. You have those opportunities, make those decisions, not based on whether you can afford it, but whether or not you want to do it. I think one of the things that spiritual people struggle with, and this is what I see anyway, is pricing their services or pricing the things that they do. I think that, and maybe it's changing now, and I really hope so, but sometimes people have this idea that, well, maybe spiritual gifts shouldn't be priced, but it's like, yeah, but it's an exchange of energy. And we've worked very hard to develop these skills. And, you know, that's taken time and investment and taking courses and trainings. You know, like when I'm on my mower today and I'm learning about Facebook ads, you know, that's me spending time upskilling. And, you know, these are things that eventually, you know, want to be compensated for in different ways. So my question to you is, how do people kind of get over the whole pricing thing? And that's really interesting that it comes back down to the niche as well, which is like when you're really focused on your niche, you can up the price because you're creating something for that specific person. But I think there's a lot of guilt around, well, can they afford it? Or, you know, should I price it what I feel that it's worth, even though maybe they won't pay it? And just on a side note, one of the things that I always remind myself, and sometimes I have to do this, is never say no for the customer, because we never know what the customer is actually thinking, as long as we can let the customer know that there's this great investment, this is the value they're going to get from it. But I'd love to hear all your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So you said it is an exchange of energy. It's really just that. So you got to think, just go, how much value is the person getting that's receiving what I'm giving? So when you do an energy, there's a lot of energy healers, how much value, and you would know because you would have heard some of the stories, and if not, like, go and ask, and like, how was this valuable to you? And price it according to that. You know, have they maybe solved a massive health issue that they've had for years and years? What value is it in that? Or are they now like happier, and so their relationship is better? Or, you know, they finally were able to, you know, do something that they haven't been able to do for a long time, whatever it is, there's value. And so make sure you provide value, make sure you provide as high a value as you possibly can. And then just realize that that's what it is. You're providing a value, they're receiving a value. And so, you know, you need to be compensated for that value. And I do think it's changing. I see, you know, pricing in the spiritual industry sort of going up, and I'm happy about that because I want these people to keep doing what they're doing, keep helping these people, and they need to earn money in order to be able to do that. So I want everyone in the spiritual industry to do more of it. And they need to be compensated for it. They need to be able to live off of it. So it comes also down to you valuing yourself. How much value do you believe that you offer? And believe in yourself. And, you know, it's a beautiful quality. I think that's what the thing that we struggle with. It is beautiful to be humble. It's beautiful to just not have this ego, like, oh, I think we get confused, like, oh, I'm worth this much. You know, it's not about ego. It's about, you know, that value exchange. So value yourself, know that you're helping people. And then also it's nice that if you really like feel bad about charging somebody that, you know, can't afford it, you can have, you know, there's means and ways of making it affordable for other people. Maybe it's a shorter session. Maybe it's a payment plan. You know, a lot of channelers that we work with, or some channelers, they really like to work on donation. And I've had actually a couple of them say, look, I actually earn more money on donation. But that's nice, you know, because some people really can't afford it, and they'll pay less, and some people will pay more, and their people will pay according to what they perceive was their value. You know, oh wow, this was very valuable for me. I can't afford to pay $100 or $200 for it, or it was really valuable, but I can really only afford like $20, $50, whatever it might be. So there's a lot of ways you can ask ChatGPT, like, what are the ways in which I could, you know, make this affordable
right now? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really important to value, because we want to keep doing the work, and we are helping other people. And so,
But what you're saying as well is, as long as it's in alignment and okay with you. And I think sometimes if someone is going, oh, this is too cheap and blah, 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 well, you need to look at that. And sometimes you have to be brave. And I was listening to this book called The Secrets of Successful Six-Figure Earners, or women six figure. I can't remember the title exactly, but it was around that. And so there was this story of this woman, and I don't know the industry she was in, but she's in this industry, let's just say graphic design. And so she had a price, and then she wanted to raise her prices, but she wasn't really sure what to do. And then she got an offer from someone she didn't want to work with. So she doubled her fee because she didn't want to work with this person. And then they paid it, and she went, oh, okay. So then she continued to double it, until somebody said, oh no, that's too much. And then she stayed at that level. And so sometimes that's also a fun way of sort of doing that. And I think it's important too, you know, one of the things, and I'd love to hear, you know, if you looked at this before, but sometimes when we're doing things, let's say you're doing something for someone at a discounted rate, is actually when you invoice them, showing the actual rate and then showing them the discount, so they're clear that this is what they received. Or I've also heard from people, if you ever do something for free for somebody, and I haven't personally done this, because I think when I've done things for free for people, it just would feel awkward to do it. But I like the idea of invoicing the person with how much it would have been, and then putting a $0 owing amount, so that that person understands what is it that you're actually providing them. So those are some of the different ways, I think, as well, that people can kind of get started or start practicing it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, again, it boils down to, like, do you believe it yourself? You know, do you believe that you're worth that much? You have to believe it. And if you don't believe it, why don't you believe it? You know, and could you do something that, you know, oh, now I'm providing a value that I just know without a shadow of a doubt that this is, it's worth that much. I've also never done an invoice for somebody that I did for free for like zero. I guess it would depend on the situation, right? Because you don't want to come across as like, hey. But it's a great idea. And definitely on the discount. Sure. This is the price. This is the discount. Yeah. Be careful with discounts too. You know, people also get like, oh, we're just going to discount da, 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 da. There's a place for discounts.
Yeah. And also you don't always say discount. You would say like special offer or exclusive, you know, like whatever, insert here, but special offer.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason, a good reason for the discount. There's got to be a good reason for the discount.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise people always expect to get a discount. I mean, we all know those websites where you go, oh, like for example, my grocery store here, I go, I don't buy my coffee full price because I know in like 1 week it's going to be half price. So I just hang out and wait. You never want to be that person where they know, oh, eventually this will be free or cheaper. Just before we wrap up here, because we're already at an hour, like I knew you and I would talk so easily about this stuff. I just absolutely love talking about these subjects. But for somebody at home, for example, who is kind of, you know, doing everything right, and they're really to get into the next sort of phase stage of their business where they're really wanting to hire, I would really wanting to know, who is the first person that you hired in your business? And did you have any tips and tricks around that?
Sure. Let me think on this time around who so it kind of depends for me. I start doing it myself and I realize, oh my goodness, okay, it's getting a lot. And I'm like, where do I need some help? Right. So I've let's see, in this business, so I've got a PA, so he does like a bit of everything for me. And yeah, so for me, like as it gets a lot, then I realize, okay, I need a marketing. There's usually like a marketing person. There's usually like an admin person. My first person is usually like jack of all trades, you know, right-hand person, does a bit of this, but like just helps me with whatever I can't do. And then as I realize, oh, I've got a lot of marketing. I really need a marketing person. Okay, cool. Let's go for that. Or now I really need, well, it's been a tech, as I'm in tech now, but you know, tech person. So it kind of depends what's like overflowing, what you just can't do anymore, compartmentalize it and then give it to that person. But it really does depend from business to business,
of the industry.
How much work, you know, is it more admin? Just make sure, like I would say with that, you know, hire slow, fire fast, right? So take your time before you hire somebody, especially if you're going to put them on the payroll. Like I like to hire on contract and I'm very open about it. Like I do, let's do a 2-week trial because you can interview, you know, 50 times. And until you start working with that person, sometimes, you know, you don't know, but the interview process is really important for me. I just, you know what I do these days? I don't even look at CVs because I can't be bothered with them. I just say, this is what the job is for. And I ask some questions. I just do a Google form and I just say, you know, what's your name? What's your email? And then answer these questions. And by the way, I can tell if they use ChatGPT or not, because, you know, when you use ChatGPT a lot, you can pick up ChatGPT. And sometimes they people use ChatGPT or if they do use ChatGPT, I go, well, you know, did they change it or did they not? Anyway, but I do ask questions that they just have to answer, you know, tell me this, tell me that, you know, related to what the job is. And then I look at that. I don't even look at the CV. I look at the CV later on, like as we're getting closer to like me hiring this person, like, okay, cool. What have they done? And then I always give them a practical thing for them to do, whatever it is that they're going to be doing. Like now, for example, I hired a video editor. I said, okay, cool. We're going to do these videos. Here's an example of what one would look like. And here's now the raw, here's the text, and now make me something that's similar. I did that with a whole bunch of them. And I mean, immediately you can just see, oh, okay. Yeah. These are good. These are bad. If I had just looked at the CVs, I would have never been able to do that. And I, and then I do a second practical thing. It's so much better to do practical stuff. You see the actual work that you would be getting. Then you hire them
and
on
the turnaround time as well. Because some people, right, when you're doing the practical thing, you give them a window in which to execute. That's the other thing.
Yeah. And I then if you don't like them, you know, don't take too long. Sometimes I just know immediately, oh my goodness, I've had the, like, this person's not going to work out. Very quickly, just let them go. It's a waste of time, a lot of waste of energy. Just hire good people.
Yeah. And you know, when someone's not the right fit, that's not a good thing for them either, right? Because they're going to be at a disservice if they're not, you know, in their happy place working where at their full potential. So, you know, put your ego to the side.
I've fired quite a few people in my life, and I always joke because we end up like best buddies after I fire them, because I inspire them. I say to them, you know, this isn't really for you. That's why you're not good at it.
Yeah.
But you are good at this, and you're always good at something. Like, and I just tell them, what are you good at? And I end up coaching them, and they're like, thank you so much for letting me go. And now, because they're also not having a good time, you know?
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And I just think that's so important to understand that. So thank you so much for being here on the show again today. I don't think this will be the last time that we hang out, I will say. I'd love to know whether or not there's anything I didn't ask you that you wanted to talk about. How can people get a hold of you? I know that, you know, I'll put a link to Oracle here in the show notes. I know you also have a special offer for our friends at home. So if you wouldn't mind just letting... saying whatever you want to say to wrap things up.
Yeah, well, in terms of the offer, yes, I think if I'm not mistaken, you will put a link below if you want to book a channeling session. They can get 15 extra minutes for that session, which is pretty cool. It's an hour session, so it would be an hour and 15 minutes. Yes. And then maybe just like last thought is that also if you are thinking about starting a business, sometimes we just like overthink things. Just sometimes all it takes is just go for it. You know what I mean? Just start. As you start, you will learn, and you know, you don't have to be perfect before you start. So just just go for it and learn as you go, and don't wait for that perfect time. It's not, you know, the perfect time is really now. And you know, I'm more than happy to. I love helping people on the entrepreneurial journey. So yeah, they're very welcome to email me through the Oracle website if they have a question. I'd be happy to help them, especially if it's in the spiritual industry. So that's it.
Thank you, Wenu. Love speaking with you, and I'll see you next time on the show.
Thanks.
Hi. Thanks so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave us a review where you listen to your podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you. New episodes every Thursday.